Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. The San Francisco International Film Festival starts April 4th. Over 200 works will screen over the next 2 weeks. And in a time when more people are watching movies on their devices than in theaters, what is the future of film and film festivals? And how will social movements like Me Too and Time's Up change who's making films, whose stories get told, and how films are promoted and shown? To help us learn more about this particular festival and the filmmaking scene in the Bay Area and beyond, we are pleased to have three guests join us tonight. Start with Rod Armstrong. He's senior programmer at the San Francisco International Film Festival, responsible for helping to select the films that will be shown over the next 2 weeks. Welcome, Rod.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by the team of Rod Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman, two local Bay Area documentary filmmakers whose works include the Oscar award-winning The Times of Harvey Milk, Common Threads, Stories from the Quilt, which is about the AIDS quilt, and Howl. They will be receiving the George Gund III Craft of Cinema Award at this year's festival and also have a new film screening on the 15th called Endgame. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
And, of course, we want to hear from you, our listeners, hear about your thoughts about film festivals in general, about film, about this particular festival. We'll open our phone lines in about 20 minutes. The number to dial to join that conversation is 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org. You can also tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So, Rod Armstrong, I want to start with you. Tell us about the San Francisco International Film Festival. What makes it unique in terms of other film festivals around the country and the many film festivals that we have here in San Francisco?
Sure. I think that one of the reasons I really like working for SF Film and appreciate the history of the festival is that it's the oldest festival in North or South America. So this year is number 61 for us. And I think we have always been an international film festival, where I think when a festival like Sundance comes along and champions independent film, which is great, we also champion independent film. But I think some festivals kind of fell in line with that and perhaps lost a little bit of sight of the great films that are being made abroad. So one of the things that I really appreciate about the SF International Film Festival is the ability to really bring to Bay Area screens work from all over the world.
And so with that, I noticed that you have not only a number of films, but a number of venues, quite a few, actually. Is it about a dozen? Is that right?
Yeah, we're not quite international in the venues, but it sometimes feels like it when you're trying to get around town. But
is that intentional? Or you just need that much space to show this screen these many films?
So one of the components that only organizers of a film festival perhaps have to think about is that because we're showing a wide range of films, you need venues of different sizes. And as multiplexes remodel and often go to stadium seating, that decreases the number of seats that are in their venue. We also have to think about how a multiplex would handle a festival being there, kind of how we would be incorporated to their footprint. So a lot of the venues we're using are single screen theaters of different sizes. This year, we're really pleased to be at the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland for 2 days, where we haven't been in the past. And one of the films being an Oakland-centric film, so it's really, I think, key for us to be there. And we're also in a new venue for us this year, the Children's Creativity Museum, which is in the Yerba Buena Center. But we're also using the standard beloved venues across town, whether it be the Castro, the Roxy, the new screening room at new-ish at San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. So, yeah, we're really spread throughout the city and even dipping our toes into the East Bay.
Are you also trying to do this in order to get a different kind of audience or a larger audience by spreading it out, spreading out the locations?
I think that's part of it, but I also think that part of it is really acknowledging the Bay Area community and its different elements. So the Pacific Film Archive, of course, is an institution that we're glad to be associated with and have been associated with for many years in Berkeley. But everybody knows that a lot of people who work in the city are, for various reasons, moving to Oakland. So I think being in Oakland is important. And also being in different neighborhoods in the city. We used to be for quite a while in Japantown, just kind of primarily focused at the Kabuki. But now we're in the Mission. We're in downtown because pockets of the city, I think demographics there have changed. And I think we're just trying to respond to those trends and see where people will come see movies.
And I earlier asked you how this film festival compares to other film festivals in San Francisco. Do you have a sense of like how you see yourself differently than those other film festivals, which often do look at independent and international films as well? They're obviously created around a very particular theme or community or advocacy. But say more about how you see the dialogue between your film festival and other film festivals in the area.
Sure. And I mean, I think that distinction is the predominant one. I think one of the few other festivals that is kind of, for lack of a better term, generic and international in focus without a specific kind of advocacy would be Mill Valley. And we're at almost directly 6 months out from one another. So I think that that creates a really good dynamic for film lovers in the Bay Area because they have a particular set of films that are kind of in their wheelhouse for that 6 months of the year, and then we have kind of our own particular set of films. But I'm really an advocate for playing well with others. I think the more film festivals in the Bay Area, the better for those people who aren't necessarily wanting to see the next superhero movie. Mm-hmm. I think having those alternatives and, I mean, I'm sometimes people complain, oh, there's a new festival every weekend here in the city. I mean, I'm one who's, hey, the more the merrier.
Right. And who is this film festival for? Is it for the local population? Are you looking to kind of draw people from further afield?
A little bit of both, but I think predominantly for the Bay Area. We're not one of the festivals that is out scouting for premieres, although we do have a specific premiere section, which maybe we'll talk about a little later, called Launch. But and so we're looking to draw people who can represent those films to the festival, and those are coming from out of town. But really, we're here for the Bay Area community. And I think a lot of our festival programming acknowledges that and respects that. And most distributors and sales agents recognize the San Francisco Bay Area as one of the predominant places to release films and kind of pay attention to what people think of those films. As some films, as your listeners probably know, go through a platform kind of release. And San Francisco is often one of those first cities, if not because sometimes people will start with New York, LA, but sometimes they'll do New York, LA, San Francisco, Chicago, kind of. Seattle, I think, is another one. But I think the Bay Area film community and how we respond to film is important to people.
So now is a perfect pivot to our two local Bay Area filmmakers who are joining us this evening and who also have a film that will be screening later in the festival, Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman. How long have you been working together, the two of you?
30 years, something like that.
And stop counting.
At least 30 years.
And so tell us about how your relationship with the Bay Area has informed your work. You've obviously done some films, like we talked about in the intro, of The Times of Harvey Milk just being one of them, that is very local, but obviously has had, you know, national repercussions, perhaps, in the message it was sending. But tell us about the relationship you have with this area.
Well, I mean, we're San Francisco-based filmmakers, so certainly the production of all those films have been really rooted in the Bay Area, with a lot of great Bay Area talent working with us. Some of the subjects come from stories that we've lived through, like The Times of Harvey Milk, Common Threads. We were both here at Ground Zero during the AIDS epidemic, and that's what motivated us to do the film Common Threads, which was about the AIDS Memorial Quilt. And other projects come to us through other means. The Celluloid Closet was an adaptation of our friend Vito Russo's book. Howl, the Ginsberg film, was a project that came to us from the Ginsberg estate. So it's really project by project, but all of them are made here in San Francisco, which is where we're based.
Hmm. And Jeffrey, what's your take on that?
The stories for our films come from the world around us, come from our experience. So, you know, a lot of them have a San Francisco flavor to them. Even Howl was very San Francisco, the beats and the first reading of Howl. So, you know, it's a, I think just living in the Bay Area, neither one of us moved here as a career move. We moved here because something about the city agreed with us. And San Francisco is a place that has always welcomed nonconformists and dissenters and free thinkers. And I think it also has attracted documentary filmmakers for many of the same reasons. People who want to look at the world around them and see room for improvement.
Mm. You know, be a documentary filmmaker in San Francisco, you really have to be your own entrepreneur. And there's no industry for documentary film in San Francisco. We are the industry. We create our own industry. But there's a very strong filmmaking community that's created. You know, we've all created our own little industries around that. But there's also a real renaissance going on with independent film in San Francisco right now, and SF Film has a lot to do with that, really. They've been nurturing and cultivating new talent, and that's something that's really, for filmmakers who have been here for a long time, you know, we've seen these cycles, and we're in a really very healthy and vibrant one right now. It really does feel like there's a renaissance of young filmmakers that are deciding to stay in San Francisco and making work out of San Francisco. And SF Film is doing a great job in helping to make that ecosystem live.
Because I was going to say, I was wondering how many times had you considered moving to, let's say, L.A. or New York to try it differently or to take it to a different level or to seize an opportunity that you wouldn't otherwise have had here.
Well, when we're in L.A. or New York working, we think, God, we really should be here. this would be a much better career move. And then we come back to San Francisco, and it's like, of course, this is where we are, and this is where we're going to be. So as Jeffrey said, it's a choice. It really, it's a very determined choice to make it work in San Francisco.
And we're close enough to L.A. We get down there a lot, and we have connections in L.A. and New York, and now especially now that everything's being done on electronically and Skype, and it's just much easier to have a career elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. And so, Rod, I wondered if you could pick up on Rob's point of how the film is trying to nurture local talent so that they don't sort of escape to other parts of the country and stay here. Tell us more about SF Film's initiatives in those areas.
Yeah, so a wing that's separate from where I work in programming is the artist development arena, which we call SF Film Makers. And basically, we are the largest granting institution now in the U.S., and possibly North America. I can't remember for sure, so don't quote me on that. But and then also we have several different types of grant, whether it be documentary or narrative. And we also have a location here in San Francisco in the Chinatown area called Film House, where people apply for a residency there, and they're working at various stages in their projects. And people like Rob and Jeffrey are serving as mentors to those people that are working on their first project.
Is it common for film festivals to have this kind of orientation, so to speak?
I mean, there's the Sundance Institute. There's the Tribeca Film Institute. There are a lot more abroad than there are here in the U.S. because there's more government support for it. Maybe you guys know of a couple other in the U.S. Those are the main ones I know.
No, it really is more of a European model than an American model.
And so, how does that work? Do you make space in the film festival for films that then were created based on these grants?
Well, we certainly wanted separation of church and state, but those are projects that we're paying particular attention to, that we're valorizing because they arise out of the Bay Area film community, and so we're paying a close eye to those projects, and one of them just happened to end up our centerpiece this year. But we have, I think, 5 different SF film supported works in this year's festival.
So let's turn now to talking about, in broad strokes, kind of the types of films and what drew your eye, and how early do you start to look at films to get them into a festival at this point? Just tell us a little bit about your process and how you kind of put the festival together, both to kind of highlight individual works but also to kind of create perhaps a cohesive whole.
Sure. The minute that the program closes on one festival, the door opens on the next. So we're already, even though I'm certainly not focusing on watching movies right now because our festival is going to start in 2 days, any film we watch at this point would be something that we're considering either for our different fall programs or for next year's festival. So that's one element. And then as far as what we're keeping our eye on, I mean, I think being a generalist festival, we don't go out looking for particular themes or particular regions of cinema to explore. It's really about looking for what's the best out there. And then the themes kind of, announce themselves to us.
Okay. So tell us, you mentioned that there's several different types of platforms of different films. Tell us about the different ones and kind of what makes a film right for a particular platform. So you mentioned The Launch, for example, and Masters
right.
is one of another one.
Sure. So we have festivals can be overwhelming to patrons that don't attend them regularly. So we try and provide various avenues for people to find what they're interested in. So we have sections of the festival, like you said, Masters is one. We have our Live and On Stage. We have the marquee presentations, which are kind of the bigger star-studded programs. And then we have experimental, like Vanguard. But then we have kind of different elements within sections, if you will. So Launch is kind of spread throughout the festival. Some of the films are in our Golden Gate Award competition. Some of them are in our Global Vision section. And these are the films that are world premieres. They all happen to be documentaries this year. And these are films that we want particular agents and representatives of film who are coming to the festival to hopefully support and perhaps distribute these movies. We do a yearly spotlight. This year happens to be space. And so we have 3 films on space that are also woven throughout the program. And we have a Cinema by the Bay section. We're talking a lot about Bay Area values and Bay Area work. And those films are also, whether they're directed by Bay Area filmmakers, one of the interesting things this year is we have several films by Bay Area filmmakers that aren't about Bay Area subjects. So we can perhaps talk a little bit about that. But also movies that are set in the Bay Area that may be made by people who don't live here. So, I mean, so hopefully what we're providing people, and with our website especially, is a way for people to not be afraid of film festivals or not. I mean, it's the old story of if you used to go into a video store and be overwhelmed by the selection and you just don't end up with anything. We don't want that to happen. We want to provide ways for people to find what they're going to enjoy.
And how did Rob and Jeffrey's piece come into view for you?
Gosh, that's a you guys submitted, right?
We did. We officially submitted.
Yeah. And then we found out that it was a Netflix project. And so it came at us in a couple of ways in that – so we have an official submission process that opens in August, and we get a lot of films, especially short films, through that avenue. And then when we have conversations with distributors and sales agents, they will also bring up projects to us as well. Have you seen this? Have you seen that? So I think when Noah or Rachel had the conversation with Netflix and they said, and by the way, we're representing Endgame, then, I mean, the two elements come together and done deal, here we are.
So tell us a little bit more about Endgame, your film that will be showing on the 15th.
Well, it's the subject matter is end of life. And we follow some visionary practitioners working in that field in their day-to-day work.
It's also Bay Area-centric. It's we embedded ourselves in 2 San Francisco institutions, UCSF Medical Center and Zen Hospice Guest House. And both of those places are really amazing institutions where I was very wary to spend weeks and weeks when we first started working on the project. But the strangest thing happens when you start spending time there. You just want to be there because the people who work there are just so great, and there's just so much love and caring going on. They were very welcoming and open to us, and we got access to some really beautiful stories. And I think it was really spending time with the practitioners, the doctors and nurses and social workers and chaplains and volunteers, and the people that they're taking care of and those people's families, that just created such a warm web of love, that we felt like this was a way of approaching this issue in a way that would invite people in if they were open to the invitation. Mm.
And how did the subject matter come to you?
It actually came to us through producer Bill Hirsch, who was interested in doing something on the theme. He had produced the film The Waiting Room about the emergency room at Highland Hospital in Oakland. And we were involved in developing that project early on, and then Jeffrey and I went on to do the film Howl. But Bill, years later, came back to us with this subject idea, and he had some contacts at UCSF. And Jeffrey and I started meeting with practitioners there and shadowing them. And that's when we were convinced that, yes, this would be a wonderful film, and these are incredible subjects that we had the privilege to follow.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious how this experience of putting together this film compares to other films you made, especially Common Threads, and in terms of like dealing with subjects around death. How do you see, is there any arc between those two pieces, or in yourselves, of how you approach the subject of death now, many years after that other documentary?
Well, with both films, in the best of circumstances, death is all about love. And in fact, that was the essence of Common Threads, and it's the essence of Endgame as well, from very different experiences and very different circumstances. For us, the making of Endgame was a very different kind of filmmaking experience, in that Jeffrey and I, we shot and recorded it ourselves. We usually work with a crew, so we're directing a crew. This was very much a much more intimate process, out of necessity. Mm. And it was just the two of us and our producer and co-cinematographer, Rebecca Ferguson. So we were right there in the last weeks of life with a few of our subjects. And it's a very privileged place to be. And when someone is there, and as I said, surrounded by that kind of love, that's really what the experience was about.
A big difference between those two films also is that Common Threads, it was happening, we were making it during the AIDS epidemic, but the stories were being told in retrospect. So we were recreating stories of relationships and lives of people who had died. And in this case, it was present tense. We were there as it was happening. So it was just a very different feeling. Hmm.
And you see, the intimacy is definitely obvious. Do you see that there was the approach, in this case, you say love was a common theme in both. Do you see things that have changed in our society that have also changed the experience of people dying from when you made Common Threads?
Well, certainly palliative care, which is one of the practitioners we follow, is very pioneering in that field, and that's a relatively new field of medicine. So that's, that is in part what we set out to do, was to demystify what is palliative care and the choices that we all have to make around end of life, and to show the institutional continuum of what those choices are, be it at a hospital or or hospice.
And Zen Hospice actually started during the AIDS epidemic. As B.J. Miller, who's one of the doctors in our film, told us, people were dying in the streets, and they were looking for places that would take them in. And one of the places they found was the San Francisco Zen Center. And eventually, the Zen Center opened a guest house, and that's where we spend a lot of time.
And I actually lived across the street, literally across the street from that guest house for 10 years. And
During the epidemic,
and had no idea what went on the other side of it. And once we were able to see what went on the other side of those doors, that's when we felt very committed to doing this film.
And how'd you come up with the title?
Bill, our producer.
Bill came up with it, and then somebody in the film actually used the phrase.
We weren't sure if it was going to be the final title was our working title, and then one of the family members actually said the line, "I can't believe this is the end game," not knowing that that was our working title, because that was something we just had for internal purposes.
In case you're just joining us, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco. And on the web at KALW.org, I'm Joseph Pache. And tonight we're talking about the San Francisco International Film Festival with Rod Armstrong, the senior programmer at the festival, and two of its filmmakers who will also be receiving an award. That's Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman. They will be screening their new film, Endgame, which is about palliative care and shot here locally in the Bay Area. During the festival. So now it's time to open our phone lines to you, our listeners. We invite you to call in with your questions and comments about this film festival, about film in general. What are you looking forward to seeing, and what would you like to see more in film festivals? The number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So are we happy with your selection now that you heard them talk about it?
Definitely.
Good answer.
But I mean, I actually have a question for them. When you were talking a little bit about the genesis of the project, was the scope always to do kind of a mid-length piece? Because what we haven't mentioned is that the movie is 40 minutes long. And I just always wonder, because it can be a challenge in festivals and such things. So.
Yeah, we always felt that it was a short, and that was probably the right length for this subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's so intense, and asking an audience to sit through a feature-length film on that subject felt like it might be pushing things further than... And we just felt like we could tell the story in short form. And it's a form... We've done one other short documentary before, The Battle of Amphar. We really liked working in that kind of concentrated form.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. It only becomes a problem when we go to film festivals.
Right.
Or try to go to film festivals.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for watchers, and it's no surprise to me that Netflix is really getting behind, and HBO Films has really gotten behind films of that length, and because I think it's really a great way to tell a story in a compact fashion.
Yeah, when Netflix came on, which was really on board with the project, which was just before we started editing, we asked them, should we be aiming for a feature or a short from your perspective? We always intended it as short. And they were adamant that they wanted a short, not a feature.
Yeah, perfect. Mm.
So it's interesting to hear the players who are coming in and influencing perhaps, or even giving space to this kind of work. So I wanted to turn our conversation to kind of film festivals more broadly, and how it intersects with trends in our social spheres and also political spheres. So first I wanted to, and again, broadening the conversation here as well to not just Rod and the San Francisco International Film Festival, but to filmmakers as well. How do you look upon the way media is consumed in putting on a film festival or creating films? So why don't we start with you, Rod? You know, with people can watch things on their phones at any time, streaming. How does that, you know, what does that do to film festivals, or what risk does that bring to film festivals?
Yeah, I mean, so certainly everybody is more inundated than ever with content. And I think that in some respect, our festival has evolved to present more kind of value-added screenings, whether it's on, in our live and on stage program, which often features live musicians playing along to films, or doing creative programming with a program like Barry, which just debuted on HBO, and we're doing a presentation of that. But in the final analysis, I mean, we just have to believe that people believe in sitting in a theater and having that communal experience with other people. And so we have to, in some way, I think, in some ways, ignore the noise of all of the other media and just bring what we consider the best in international cinema that is kind of on offer to us at our time of year to the Bay Area and hope that people will come.
Would you ever consider having a sort of a dual platform, like live in the theater and streaming?
Well, interestingly enough, you gave me the perfect lead-in. The SF Film has a screening room that is available to members. And right after the festival ends, we will be offering a number of films from the festival for our members to be able to watch. And that screening room is available now that has content from last year's festival, along with even some films that didn't screen in the festival. So certainly we're entering that arena and we're not ignoring that arena. And I think other festivals are doing the same. But at the same time, our focus is really still on the theatrical experience and hoping that not just that people will put their phones down and come to see some of our programs, but also trying to offer those patrons something extra where people will say, okay, yes, I could wait perhaps and see something like the movie that's about Joan Jett, Bad Reputation, later in the year when it will have a theatrical release, but they're not going to get to see Joan Jett at the Castro. So that's a very particular festival experience that we can offer.
And from your research, how do film festival goers differ from the broader film consuming public?
Gosh, I mean, there's such a range, just like the range of the films in the festival, because there are people that are interested in seeing high-level talent. There are people that are interested in the live component. There are people who are interested in seeing films before they're released theatrically. Then there are the real avid cinephiles who want to see the movies that they're never going to have a chance to see again. We have I think it's something like 22 years since we've shown a movie from Kyrgyzstan. We have a movie from Kyrgyzstan in this year's festival. So, I mean,
where's Kyrgyzstan?
It's kind of, I'm not even going to say because I might get it wrong. I think it's on, or I think it's a little bit landlocked in from the Black Sea or the Caspian Sea, but it's very, very small. Oh. And it might border Kazakhstan. Anyway, yeah, I had to look it up when I watched the movie, and now I've since forgotten it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think that you see, hopefully, as broad a range of patrons as you do the different kinds of film experiences that we're offering to them.
Mm. And so now turning to you, Rob and Jeffrey, how the same question about how people are consuming media, how does that influence, if at all, the way you make film?
I don't think it influences the way we make film. We're certainly grateful for film festivals for giving us the chance to see the film with an audience, because when films go direct to a service like Netflix or television, you just make the film and it goes out there, and then you might get some feedback indirectly, one way or another. But there's nothing like sitting in an auditorium filled with people and feeling them respond to the film. And some of our films have been released theatrically, but usually for documentaries, the way that happens is at a film festival.
Rob?
It certainly hasn't changed how we tell stories. The platforms change and are changing, but that doesn't really affect the filmmaking.
And is that something that, because just you've had to kind of resist that, or do you feel like that's just something that it still can, your craft can be consumed in whatever platform it's viewed in.
So far, that's been the case. Check with us in 10 years. But, yeah, I mean, our films show at festivals, and then they're released via a broadcaster. In this case, the equivalent of the broadcaster is a streaming service, Netflix. So in that sense, that's been the platform shift for us, going from a broadcaster to a streaming service, which we're thrilled about because Netflix's reach is astounding.
Right. But they didn't come to you and give you some sense of like how things have to be different because it's going through that kind of a platform.
No.
They wouldn't encroach on that.
Yeah, I think they came to us because of the subject and our approach to the subject and our track record as filmmakers.
Again, let me reintroduce the program. It's City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're joined by Rod Armstrong, senior programmer at the San Francisco International Film Festival, and Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman, local Bay Area documentary filmmakers who have a new film called The Endgame that will be showing in the festival. Again, the number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So let's go to Morris, or Maury, actually. Maury, welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening. the program is quite interesting, but for an international film festival discussion, it's a little parochial. I wonder if you could talk, the senior programmer for the festival could talk about some of the international entries into the festival that we should not miss.
Yeah, I mean,
thanks so much for your call.
Sure. So you sound like one of the cinephiles who wants to see something that she can't see elsewhere except in a film festival. And I would really point, we were talking about the different sections of our festival, and what we consider predominantly the discovery section of our festival is the Golden Gate Awards competition. So we have 10 narrative features, first features for some directors who are competing for a cash prize, as well as 10 documentary features that are also competing, and both competitions are juried selection of screenings. And so these films happen usually in the second week of our festival, and I would draw attention to a movie like Scary Mother from Georgia, which is about a woman who writes, she's the mother of three, and she writes a thinly disguised autobiography about her family and basically her dissatisfaction with being a wife and parent, and her family goes crazy. And the way that that unfolds and the different dynamics that the director is using to tell that story, whether it be the soundtrack, the performances, or how the narrative develops, I think is really interesting. The movie I talked about earlier from Kyrgyzstan, Suleiman Mountain, is about a loosely allianced group of people who are kind of trying to ply their trade around this holy mountain. And one of the women in their group is perhaps a seer, but perhaps she's also a con man. And again, I think this story unfolds its narrative in really surprising ways. And I think that's what we're really looking for in kind of this discovery section of our festival. If documentaries are more up your alley, we have a really fine one called The Other Side of Everything, which is about the Balkan War. And we expect the film is predominantly about the director's mother and her experiences during the crisis. She was a very outspoken person, and the mother and the daughter are both going to come and present the film. So that should be exciting.
And yeah, how often do you try to get filmmakers from international locations to come here, and how much do you have to work at getting all the logistics just right, especially with a lot of travel restrictions these days?
Well, while I'm here talking to you, our guest services people are all working very hard to make sure our filmmakers get on flights and get into hotel rooms. So, I mean, we bring on a good number of staff just for the festival. And so we've been communicating with people as we confirm titles and seeing about their availability. But then at a certain point, we pass on all this information onto them, and then it's down to the fine logistics. But in an ideal world, we'd have people here for every film. Now, of course, that's not possible with San Francisco hotels being what they are and with people's own schedules being what they are. But we are expecting to have, with both local, national, and international guests, upwards of 200 people visiting the festival and presenting their films. So that's exciting, and I mean, I think a great reason why, when people say, why should I come to the festival? Well, that's a great reason. You have a chance to talk to filmmakers from around the world.
Mm. So we talked a little bit about how the changing social mores around how we consume are affecting or not affecting film festivals and filmmakers. Let's talk about Hollywood a little bit more. How much of what is happening in Hollywood, specifically around the Me Too movement and Time's Up movement, that were so prominently discussed in this year's Oscars, how much of that is reverberating through your team and the San Francisco International Film Festival and other film festivals at this time?
From a logistical standpoint, it's something we really wanted to respond to quickly. And so we developed our zero tolerance policy and a code of conduct both for the organization and for the festival pretty early on. And so, I mean, that's something we stand behind. As far as the festival goes, I mean, of course you would be dissembling if you said, oh, it didn't matter at all to the programming, because we still want to find the best work, and we've always championed women filmmakers. But certainly you have a particular eye this year, and I think some narrative elements are going to be a little more problematic and challenging if you present a film with those elements in them, whether we're talking about a narrative that deals with harassment or assault on a woman, whether you're presenting a film that stars somebody who has accusations or not. I mean, I think those things certainly have to enter into the conversation. I mean, another element, apart from Me Too, of course, is politics. I mean, we have leader that has challenged many people's idea of what is presidential. And I think we were expecting perhaps a more political program than this one ended up being, because we thought, oh my gosh, the conversation is going to be all about kind of what's going on in the U.S. and how it's 50% this way and 50% that way. And it was surprising to see how that wasn't necessarily the case. I mean, it weaves itself throughout the program, but I would have thought it would have been a more significant element than it turned out to be.
Is that just a matter of timing or time, meaning that given how far in advance you have to start to select films for the next film festival, it's just a little too early to try to catch those types of films?
How long it takes to make films.
Right. Yeah. I think that's perhaps it, and perhaps also people are waiting a little bit to see how it plays out, because it's been so... to use a non-judgmental word, it's been so chimerical. I mean, you wake up and you just, okay, well, what's happening now? Who's been fired? Who's been hired? What's the stock market doing? What is North Korea saying? What is this person doing and that person doing? So, yeah, I mean, I think perhaps people are just waiting a little bit and letting things simmer and gestate. And so maybe next year we'll see a more politically activist-oriented festival.
So, yeah, so going back to this statement of values that you talked about, it's on the, you know, inside cover here, second page, actually, of your program. And it was quite unusual for me to see. I'm assuming this has not appeared before. Do you always have a statement of values like this?
No, for sure.
And, you know, it talks about creating spaces that are free of harassment and discrimination along a number of lines. And you said a little bit about that in your previous answer, but why did you feel like you needed to put this in the program? What are you trying to make sure? What message are you trying to make sure people hear? Are you concerned that filmgoers are somehow going to react in a negative way that could be crossing a line if seeing content that they're not in agreement with?
No, I mean, I think it falls in line with an ethos of art appreciation and festival going where. And it just seemed the right time to make a bold and precise and direct statement about how we want to present kind of a universe of narratives and a wide representation of those narratives, but that people kind of view those narratives with an eye toward respectfulness. And we don't, the political conversation, of course, right now in this country is so fraught and tense. And while we may want that in some of our programs in the festival, we don't want the conversation about that work to be fraught and tense and divisive. And so I think, and the other element is just really about creating community. That we want people to discuss the films in lively fashion, but not to like end a relationship over or something like that, or not to disavow somebody else's opinion. So it felt like the right time to really have a clear set of values and kind of say, in a way, this is what the festival has always been about, but here we're just putting it out there for all of you.
For all to see. So back to you, Rob and Jeffrey. Given all that's been going on in Hollywood, how do you react? How have you reacted to kind of what you've seen unfold over the last several months? And how do you see this changing filmmaking, both at the Hollywood level and perhaps at other levels, like where it's not sort of at the blockbuster level?
I think where the real change is going to be is at the structural level in Hollywood, in the places where those decisions get made. I think that boards and the larger entities just will no longer be able to get away with being purely white male bastions of power. And for years, I was on the board of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and I know the rapid changes that have been going on there within that institution, which is a very important one in the industry and in Hollywood. And I think that's where change is really going to take root, is at that structural level. That's my belief. Mm. Just seeing what's happening and the seriousness of purpose and intent that's going on in Hollywood right now.
And sustained. And it's going to be sustained.
The proof will be in the pudding as to whether it's going to be sustained. But that's why I feel like the structural changes that are happening will allow for that kind of sustainability and promote it. Hmm.
Jeffrey, anything to add there?
No, it feels to me that things are the industry is trying to respond in the people that it hires. Statistically, it doesn't sound like there are huge progress being made yet, but it certainly feels to me that there are more women, people of color, who are being hired to direct movies, some very big budget movies.
And you know what I think why I believe that the change will be sustainable, because I think people are finally understanding that it's a value, you know, that there's a real necessary value in this change. It's not just for doing it for any politically correct reasons. I hate that term, but I'll use it. I think the sea change is that people are really getting to see and looking around a room, and if it's just a room of one kind of person, that there's something missing, and that there's a value in multiplicity of voices and perspectives, and that the institutions need to reflect that.
Mm. And Rod, how is SF Film taking that beyond what they write on a page here to look at who is actually making the films and how, you know, and perhaps examining your own institution's potential, you know, unconscious bias around how films are selected, and perhaps, you know, would you ever look at how, you know, like, you know, we talk about fair trade. Would you ever look at if, you know, would a standard emerged about who got to work on all the parts of a film? Was it more a fair workforce? Would you look at those as markers for what you wanted to bring into a festival? And how, again, do you compare, you know, balance that with wanting to make sure you have a, you know, a engaging festival that has high quality film at the
sure.
same time?
I mean, I think if you're talking about any kind of quota, that always is a little bit dangerous territory. But I think that we certainly advocate this multiplicity of voices and experience that that people who aren't white heterosexual males can bring to cinematic endeavors. So we're definitely going to pay attention to those producers, to those studios, to those sales agents, to those festivals that are bringing those voices to light. And I think that we want to champion them. And one of our goals this year in our next year's call for entries is to really do significant outreach to those people that are championing women's voices and are championing voices from African countries. That's a region that is very difficult to watch and see cinema from. So, I mean, I think that our goals are pretty clear in that realm and always have been, but I think perhaps even to a greater extent.
Mm-hmm. And so then how do you see the film festival evolving in the next 5 to 10 years with that frame of reference?
I mean, what you would hope. One of the interesting documentaries that we're showing in the festival is called Half the Picture. And there's a statistic presented at the beginning of the movie that in the last 20 years, the number of Hollywood films directed by women has not changed, the percentage. That percentage has not shifted in 20 years. So I would hope that in 5 years, even the percentage, so our percentage is much higher than Hollywood, thank goodness. But I would even hope that the percentage of films directed by women and by non-white filmmakers also sees a shift over the next 5 years, even within our festival.
And would you see that perhaps, I know you don't work in that side of the house, but would you see that as something that the other side, which puts money into developing filmmakers, would be trying to be intentional about?
Sure. I mean, I know it is.
So that's already happening. What other trends do you see in filmmaking from your perspective as being working together for 30 years what would you like to see happen?
Well, today I was having a conversation with a student who was telling me about how in China people are watching 30-second movies with 30-second movies with a beginning, middle, and end, which I've yet to discover those, but I guess that's a trend in China.
And Jeffrey?
What was the question?
What would you like to see? How would you like to see film evolve, or what do you imagine it how it would change, or even in your own craft, what new frontier would you like to try to encroach on, either whether it be from a technical standpoint or a subject matter or something like that?
We've done some work that crosses genres, and we've done hybrid documentary, scripted narrative work that I find really interesting, and it's always the hardest work to get made because nobody knows what slot to put it in. It's not hard to get it seen, I don't think, because people like to see something new and interesting. But to me, that's stretching genres and finding new ways of storytelling is the most exciting challenge.
Cool. And Rod, we have a couple more minutes left in the program. I want to give people information about how they can learn about the film festival and get tickets and such. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Of course. Well, as I was talking about before, hopefully we've created a website where people can dive as deep as they want to. That website is sffilm.org. Tickets for the programs are all available there, except the ones that have unfortunately already gone to rush. Well, fortunately for us, but not necessarily for ticket buyers. There's the wide swath of venues. You can kind of organize things by calendar date if there are particular days that you have available. And my understanding is that we're going to have quite a rainy weekend, so I think it's time to go to the movies.
Get those tickets now. And then, Jeffrey, do you want to tell us a little bit about when your film will be screening?
Endgame will be screened on Sunday, April 15th at 1 o'clock in the afternoon at the Castro Theater. It's part of a program in which we're getting an award. We're very honored to be receiving George Gunn III Craft of Cinema Award from the festival, and we'll be doing an onstage conversation with Ruby Rich, and there'll be people from the film to answer questions with us afterwards.
So you get to meet Rob and Jeffrey if you get to see the film. Well, I really want to thank you, all three of you, for talking with me about this particular festival and just in general filmmaking and film viewing. So I want to thank my guests, Rod Armstrong, Senior Programmer at the San Francisco International Film Festival, Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman, local Bay Area documentary filmmakers who will be screening their new film, Endgame, which will be showing at the San Francisco International Film Festival, which runs from April 4th to the 17th, 200 films at over about a dozen venues all around the Bay Area. And as you heard, sffilm.org is the place to go to find out more about it. So thanks to all of you for joining me.
Thank you very much.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Vision's page at kalw.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Grace Wan. Join my co-host Ethan Elkind next week as we learn about the so-called clean meat movement. You're going to have to tune in to find out what that means. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.